This is called desahogarse. In Spanish, home, hogar, sounds like drown, ahogar, but Laura tells me Spanish speakers don't notice. At Laura's house, we leave doors open because we want to laugh and gather. Laura shares the big bed with her mother, even when they are not speaking. Desahogarse is to unburden yourself, not to undrown or even to unhome. When I go home, I still don't know how to talk. Casa is house and casarse to marry, and when you marry yourself with another, you house yourself, I think. In my house, any closed door was opened, so I could not be naked. In the catalog of dreams about my mother, there's one where I search for keys in her white apartment, a place she's never lived. I'm leaving, unhoming myself without drowning. When I go back to the house, it's different. I still don't know what to do with the voices in the attic. But downstairs, outside, in the huge lights the windows throw across the dark, a deer bucks and leaps in the driveway. And I can stand there, watch it dancing.
That's poet Megan Alpert, who's in town as part of the Evolve Marquette, a creative residency that is going on during March, April, and May. Welcome, Megan.
Thank you.
What drew you to coming out to applying for this residency here in the Marquette area?
Well, it was a couple different things. First of all, I was working as a senior editor at Snopes.com, and I was living in Washington, D.C., and neither of those things are conducive to peaceful reflection. So I knew that if I was going to proceed and progress on the projects that I was working on, I was really going to need some time away. And I preferred that it be time close to nature, in a smaller, more remote place, without full-time work.
Mm-hmm. The hustle and bustle of the big city, obviously, yeah, it's hard to maintain that peace. What is it that you're working on here as part of your residency?
So I'm working on two different projects. Mm-hmm. One is a book of poetry that focuses on anger and sexual violence, which was doubly hard to write while I was working a stressful full-time job.
At Snopes and in D.C.,
right.
Go figure.
Yeah. And the second is a young adult science fiction novel.
Oh, okay.
Uh-huh.
Is there any connection to the anger? I mean, is there a connection between the two projects?
Yeah, there is. I would say the novel is a little bit more overtly political and addresses groups and systems a little bit more. It's about a disease that causes people to lose their hands. And in this future world, there are super advanced prosthetics that you can just kind of slip on, like you're slipping on a glove and you have a working hand again.
Okay.
But those are only available to the very rich.
Of course.
And so the protagonist becomes part of a group of radical activists who, in order to try to alert people to this injustice, start stealing the prosthetic hands from rich people and redistributing them to people who cannot afford them.
Okay. And the folks who can't afford them, how are they able to even survive if they lose their hands?
Well, that's an interesting question. And actually, I ended up doing a lot of research on prosthetics, mm-hmm. the prosthetics that are available today, because every scene that I wrote, every action that I had my character do, I was encountering, well, how is she going to accomplish this with no hands?
Mm-hmm.
And during the course of my time here, I actually interviewed a man who lost his hand when he was about 18 and built his own prosthetic. And now he owns a prosthetics company.
No kidding.
Yeah. And So he was explaining to me that you can actually really accomplish a lot with a body-powered prosthetic, that you you sort of open and close the hook at the end of the prosthetic using muscles in your back and in your torso, and you can get feedback to feel how tightly you're gripping something.
Really?
Yeah, so he gave the example of, he said, if a pencil is rolling off the table and it's closer to my prosthetic than to my actual hand, I will, without even thinking, just catch it with my prosthetic. That's how good he is at using it. So this became a big deal for all of my characters, which prosthetics they're using, and how good they are at using them.
What class of prosthetic do you have?
Right.
Oh, wow. Yeah. I would imagine that your research has led this novel to be, it sort of helped it blossom beyond what you were thinking in the beginning.
Absolutely.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. Are there any characters who have absolutely no access or ability to have any prosthetics, or do the mostly poor people like build their own little whatever we can do?
So in the novel, health insurance covers the body-powered prosthetics, mm-hmm. And then some of the characters use myoelectric hands or motorized prosthetics that are powered by batteries, and so they all make do in different ways with these different kinds of prosthetics. Yeah, so there's not a character in the book that has no prosthetics at all.
Okay.
Okay. Yeah.
I have something. Who's going to star in the movie? Sorry. but connecting back to the anger and the violence, I understand here in town, part of the Evolve Marquette residency was to do a presentation or lead a group, and you actually led a writer's group recently. Can you tell us about that, how that went?
Yeah. That was so gratifying and fun for me. So I have been thinking for quite a while about how to potentially have this, because backing up a little bit, I should say, I started my book in 2016, right as we were coming up to the election, when it seemed like everyone around me was really angry and really having so much trouble processing that emotion or knowing what to do about it. And so when I write poetry, often I'm writing about something that I don't quite understand, and I'm trying to understand it better by writing usually like a series of poems about it. So I started writing about anger only knowing that I didn't really know what to do about it or with it.
Yeah.
And then I got a job at Snopes, which only increased the anger I was both feeling and observing.
Mm-hmm.
And I ended up turning to Buddhist practices to help me. So the first book that I read about anger was, it was called Anger by Thich Nhat Hanh. And then I, after reading that, I started doing some research into different kinds of therapy having to do with anger.
Yeah.
So one of them is called AEDP therapy, Accelerated Experiential Dynamic Psychotherapy. Okay. And that kind of therapy actually uses some mindfulness and meditation techniques in the therapy.
Yeah.
And so I just have started thinking, well, how can I potentially lead community workshops that help give people tools to process anger and that combine those tools with poetry, which I think is a great way to process and express emotions,
mm-hmm.
And to build empathy between people.
Yeah.
So it was using what I had been reading and the meditation practice that I had started in my own life, and then trying to bring that together with crafting poems.
Okay.
So it was very experimental. We started by doing we started first by talking about anger and why we even have anger. Like, why did humans evolve to feel this emotion, and what are its uses?
Mm-hmm.
And then we did a guided meditation where I invited people to, first kind of get centered and figure out what they were feeling at that moment.
Right.
And to focus on their body and on their breath. And then each person chose some situation that they could bring to mind that they personally find frustrating or annoying. So I asked people not to think about the worst thing that ever happened to them, but just something that upsets them. And so each person during the meditation brought that to mind. And then I wanted them to just observe what the feeling of anger is like in the body. So is it hot? Is it cold? Is it in your chest? Is it in your hands? Is it in your stomach? And then to observe what the anger did when they looked at it. So did it get stronger? Did it dissipate? Did it ebb and flow? And then...
Quite a journey.
It was. And I'm so grateful to them. The workshop participants were so great. And they really... I felt like there was so much compassion in that room because it wasn't about am I right or am I wrong in this situation? Should I feel or not feel angry? It was just an understanding, I think, that anger is a basic human emotion and that it's a kind of suffering that we all experience. And so we went around the table and people talked about where they felt the anger. Mm-hmm. And it was really interesting that there were so many different answers. Some people felt it in their temples. Mm-hmm. Some people felt it in their chest or in their throat. And then from there, we went into writing exercises. And each person, we read a poem, this great poem by Marie Howe called What the Angels Left, where in the poem, the speaker in the poem starts finding scissors all over her house, and she doesn't know where they're coming from or why they're appearing, but she like opens a drawer in her kitchen and there's scissors, and she goes to sleep at night and under her pillow there's scissors, and she doesn't know what to do with all these scissors that keep appearing. So I asked the people in the workshop to imagine that their anger is some kind of object, and what does the object want from them? What do they want to do with the object? And does the object change or transform? And so they wrote these really beautiful poems about they each had a different object. A couple of them were rocks. Mm-hmm. One of them was handprints and footprints on a wall.
Really?
And it was just so gratifying to hear their beautiful work, and there was a real feeling of just like warmth and compassion in that room that I was really into. So it was great.
That sounds terrific.
Yeah.
Well, now you've talked so much about poetry. Can we hear another one of your poems?
Sure.
Yeah. Let's do it.
Okay, so this is actually the first poem that I wrote for this book, and I wrote it about 6 years before I actually started the book, and when I first wrote it, just thought, I don't know what this thing is. I better put it away, which maybe tells you something about my relationship with anger. This is called Rage as Bird. When my mother puts the red bird in her mouth, the beak flint strikes her tongue, sparks, and catches. This new tongue fills her mouth, spreads to eat her face, a black circle ringed with flame, a roar sucking in the cold air. I know how it hurts her, and I run from it. In the story I tell myself later, as the mouth grows, the universe enters, and she becomes space. Big enough for the moving stars. In the story, I tell myself, she does this in private, without me, the way someone might change behind a folding screen. Our planet rises and on it, my mother sits beneath a spill-leaf maple the bird lands in, to sing with her about dry grass and matches.
What was the title of that poem again?
So that poem is called Rage as Bird, and it's from a series that I started that all are rage something. Mm-hmm. So I think one really interesting thing to me about anger is the many forms that it takes and the kind of million ways that it might manifest, or that we might share it with another person, or the way it can be contagious. Mm-hmm. And like the great irony of anger, I think, is that if you simply vent it, it's very damaging. Yeah. But if you don't express it and you repress it, it's equally damaging.
It's also, so. I really enjoyed when you're talking about the workshop you did and introducing the mindfulness and simply, in a sense, checking in with yourself and how are you feeling, because I know sometimes the key to dealing with anger is realizing that you're angry to begin with.
Yeah.
You know, and then once you figure that out, it's like, okay, what am I angry? I mean, it's this long process, and in this day and age especially, it seems that we need instant answers. What's your problem? Whereas it sounds more like, take a step back and go from D.C. to the U.P., and chill for a minute, and maybe that'll help you see some things.
Yeah, I feel like I'm denigrating D.C., and I don't...
No, that's okay.
I should say I learned mindfulness practices in D.C. Mm-hmm. With the Washington Mindfulness Community, which is an amazingly generous and kind and compassionate group of people who practice meditation in the style of Thich Nhat Hanh.
Okay.
But yes, I think... There is this kind of urge or this pressure I think we all feel to do something right away. And often I think part of that comes from how uncomfortable it is to sit with your own negative or unpleasant feelings.
Yeah, it makes you uncomfortable, like you said.
Yeah.
I don't want to be here.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. So Thich Nhat Hanh says your anger is like your baby.
Mm-hmm.
And when your baby is crying, it would be insane to just throw your baby out the window. So
I like that.
Yeah, so instead you should treat your anger the way that you treat a baby, which is that you hold it and you care for it and you try to figure out what it needs.
And you let it cry.
Mm-hmm.
Gotta let the baby cry.
Uh-huh.
That's what a baby does.
Right.
Well, it sounds like what you're telling us is that poetry is much more than just poetry. There's a lot of this connection. It sounded to me in the beginning that some of your poetry is a journey in itself. I don't quite know what I'm writing about yet. I'm going to find out what it is I'm writing about. And my guess is you find out you're writing about several things and might need to narrow it down a little bit. Because it sounds like your brain... is open to a lot of different things coming in. Lots of visits.
Yeah, that's why it was a book about anger and not a poem about anger.
Otherwise it would be an epic poem.
That would never be finished.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, when is a work ever finished, really? Huh? Well, Megan Alpert, it's been so delightful having you stay here in Marquette and stop by the stations to tell us about your residence here with the Marquette, the Evolve Marquette Residency Program. Thanks for stopping by.
Thanks so much for having me.
All right. Hey, before we go, we have a couple of minutes. Is there one more poem you got that you'd like to read?
Sure.
I think there was one. Yeah, let's...
I can.
Let's do that. What's this one?
This one is called Rage Borrowed, and I wrote it thinking about the ways that we often take on anger for other people. How was I to know, walking, that the forest around us would deepen and black out the stars? But we could hear the river, the rustles in the brush. You pulled a lump of clay from the ground. It smelled like rot. It glowed blue. You passed it to me, a lump, a light to see by. That's licorice fern, I told you. That's skunk cabbage. And there's a used-up fox. The lump in my hands thickened once you saw the fox opened on the ground. Grew too big to hold. I stretched it, draped it over my shoulders, tied it around my waist. But it was heavy, and I sank to the ground. Put my head to the wet ground. Leave it, you said. Let's go. It stank like the spent fox. But I couldn't. I stretched, pulled, hollowed it into a boat I heaved in the river. Get in, I told you, scared now. But you would not get in. Let's go, I said. But I would go alone. Go down the river and out of you, unable to remember. Had you pulled it out of me? Had we found it when we woke? Had we made it? Had you put it in my hands?
Megan Alpert, thank you so much once again for stopping by.
All right, thanks so much for having me.